We're back in the Congressional Corner with Congressman Richie Neal of the beautiful 1st District of Massachusetts, my district. Richie, we are very pleased to have you with us. Of course, everybody wants to know about Trump and his taxes. New York passed a bill allowing you to get your hands on their state taxes, but you've been declining to do that. What's the rationale?
Well, the House counsel, Doug Letter, who has spent a career of 40 years in the Justice Department and who has regularly argued in front of the United States Supreme Court, has advised me time and again as we have proceeded down this road to make a sound legal case based upon policy and not politics. And I have scrupulously followed the advice of House counsel. We have methodically pursued this provision in the law, 1603, in which we have followed the spirit of the law as it was intended. And clearly, there is some question as to whether or not the New York state taxes, because we do not have jurisdiction over them, according to Attorney Letter, could conceivably, in some case, jeopardize this effort. Now, we've had these very successful moments along the way, including just last week before Congress adjourned for recess, in which we were able to ascertain that the Ways and Means Committee, which has used 1603 in the past to secure tax forms, and recall that the law is very specific. There are three people that can request a president's tax returns: the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, or the head of the Joint Tax Committee. We have established that not just eight former American presidents have all voluntarily released their tax forms, but just as importantly, that Congress was able to use, I'm sorry, take that back, that we were able to use 1603 when the Joint Committee on Taxation requested President Nixon's return. So now we have also established precedent for the committee's request. We have time and again been advised by very experienced legal counsel that we want to make sure that we don't damage the federal case. And recall, in the end, this is about federal law. So what New York did, that's up to New York, but recall that this is a federal case.
But there's a pent-up, tremendous pent-up frustration with this president not releasing his tax returns. And you've got to deal with that in a political sense as well as in a very formal, correct sense in terms of following the law.
Well, this is also one of the most important engagements that I've had. I mean, the Ways and Means Committee right now, we are in the midst, under my leadership, of renegotiating NAFTA. We have a revisit of Medicare extenders, tax extenders. We have a plate full of issues, including some of tax corrections that will have to take place. So the issues that we deal with in this particular instance are really critical. And what I'm doing in this case on the president's tax returns is to highlight the responsibility of the Ways and Means Committee. And this can't be, Alan, just about TV lawyers giving advice. This is about attorneys that sit in the room with you, including a private law firm, and they give you counsel. And one of the things that they have suggested time and again to me, and in fact, they've been very stern about it, and that is that I should not be doing TV shows talking about this issue. Instead, we are going to stick to the position that we've taken, that this is a policy consideration.
Well, we're lucky to have you then. You know, I mean, we ain't no TV show, but we're making news here, and I'm very pleased that you are allowing us to hear you on this. You know, it seems to me that this is a place that people are going to be, you know, focusing on with you, and that your answers to this become very important, especially if you're being opposed by a clearly ambitious young mayor from Holyoke.
Well, I mean, I think that wisdom dictates that a case that is likely to find its way not through the federal appellate courts, but conceivably could make it to the Supreme Court, that the approach must be methodical and it must be very considered as you go forward, avoiding emotion.
So, okay. So you've mentioned the courts. Where are we in terms of making the president produce his federal tax returns?
We have sued Federal District Court of Washington for the president's tax forms. And in fact, as you know, the president has sued me so that we would not have the chance to review those tax forms. And for the moment, we're waiting for a consideration. The judge has suggested that at this time that it would not be appropriate for us. It's a bit of a moratorium that he's called in the dispute over the New York tax forms. So we have, again, stayed away from commentary and proceeded based upon, again, a federal case that we intend to approach with the kind of careful consideration that I think that has marked my career.
I know you're not going to want to hear this question, but here it is. There are Republican judges and there are Democratic judges. What do we got here?
Well, you know, I'm glad you raised that because you and I are of a certain age, and there was a time when judges were judges, and now
right.
I frequently review cases where somebody, almost in parenthesis, right after a judge's name is announced, they will put in the parenthesis a Trump judge or a Clinton judge or an Obama judge. I think that's a very unfortunate consideration. And I thought that even Justice Roberts and Justice Ginsburg recently, the two of them, to their credit, pointed out that this is not about the president that appoints you. This is about interpretation of the law. So at the moment, this case is in front of Judge McFadden, and he is a Trump appointee. There are appellate courts down the road, and remember that this case was randomly assigned. So we are very patient in constructing the case and feel that under scrutiny, the case will stand up.
Yeah, but, you know, as we have seen with the Supreme Court, by the time cases get there, you know, we get these 5-4 decisions, the Republicans versus the Democrats or the moderates. I mean, you know, I mean, doesn't that undermine our faith in the federal judiciary?
I think that you're right, and I hearken to Brown versus the Board of Education.
Right.
And recalling that Mr. Chief Justice Warren was an Eisenhower appointee, as were many of the, including Justice Brennan, who turned out to be two of the most liberal members of the court as it came to interpretation of civil rights laws going forward. And at the same time, I know that Byron White, Wizard White, who Jack Kennedy appointed, turned out in Kennedy's eyes to be a bit of a disappointment.
Yep.
And so I think that there are examples that Supreme Court justices, they actually follow the law. And oftentimes in many of these cases, you will find that, as Justice Ginsburg noted a couple of weeks ago, which I was very pleased with, that she thought that any idea that we would tamper with the belief that in the end the courts are supposed to review law, not make it, is an important consideration.
And yet, this federal judge appointed by Trump, I'm sorry, I know you're not going to want to answer this, but my commentary is has got to be sitting there with his legs shaking as he stalls on giving you a fast and clear answer. You've outlined the law. You know, we know what the law is. It's been used in the past, and here he is, and he's taking his time.
Well, the law is clear. The law says shall. That's the key phrase.
It's always great to talk to our friend, Congressman Richie Neal of the beautiful 1st District, my hometown of Great Barrington, as well as Springfield and so many other, Holyoke, many incredible places. Thank you, Richie, for being with us. You are a powerful man. You are very much in demand, and we are extremely lucky to have you. We'll be back with one more round. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan.